Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And in the studio with us this morning.
Living up to your reputation.
Yeah, it's quite a task. We have our buddy, Barnaby Wayne Fan.
Barnaby Wayne Fan, engineer at large.
Oh, man, I'm telling you.
Solving the world's problems, one calculation at a time.
That's it, exactly.
Well, I don't know about solving the world's problems, but making airplanes fly better, one vortex generator at a time,
there
maybe.
You go.
I don't know.
There you go.
Great to be with you guys. Great to be back here
at
Oshkosh with
here.
All my friends and among all these beautiful airplanes.
You were saying before we came on the air about the differences in the airplanes you're seeing, the spectrum to the other.
It's cool. I'm here with my oldest daughter, Catherine, and she's got an assignment from Kit Planes to just create a photo library of types. And so we're going around the flight line and, much more conscious of, hey, there's one of these and there's one of those kind of thing than usual. So, like this morning, we went directly from a Pitot pole that's a beautiful, built, period-correct Pitot pole with a Model A engine in it, all wood and fabric. And, the next airplane down the line that we go to is a Dyke Delta, which is a 1960s design that still looks like the future in the 21st century, and then a Skybolt, which is a classical biplane. And then, next down we're at a Sabrewing, which is automotive engine like the Pitot pole, but 70 years later, and a composite airframe. And you can see all the stages of evolution of this magnificent thing we call EAA and home building, just on that little bit of the flight line. And you can really get an idea of how home builders have taken all of the technologies that are available to them at any given time. Pitot pole's a wooden fabric airplane with a car engine.
Right. Hand-built.
Yeah. The Dyke Delta was the first composite skin home built ever. Most people don't realize that, but it's a steel tube frame, but the skins are fiberglass.
And I did not know that.
Me neither.
The reason John Dyke did that is he couldn't get aluminum wide enough for those very long cord, low aspect ratio wings. So he just basically laid out like linoleum and laid up glass on it to make glass sheet metal.
Wow.
And then you get to the fully molded composites and things like that. So, and it continues. I mean, as you walk around the grounds, you see people playing with, now with electrics of various sorts, all kinds of engines, a lot of interesting avionics stuff coming along. Now, my kind of flying that I normally do, I don't pay that much attention to avionics because, in my personal flying life, I'm a VFR puddle jumper kind of pilot.
Right.
But, there's some pretty remarkable stuff out there. And, there's all these smart people doing all this cool stuff.
Well, even the technology is getting cheaper and cheaper. Even you, as a VFR puddle jumper, can take your phone, if nothing else, and go Google, where am I?
Oh, yeah. And once again, from the perspective of either a home builder or a modeler, and, in my day job, I'm in the military aircraft world. You just look at the technology and what people call drones these days, and I find that term amazing because drone was the original term for unpiloted airplanes.
Right.
And if you look at the sequence, it went from drone to RPV, which was remotely piloted vehicle, to UAV, which was unmanned or uncrewed aerial vehicle, depending on how politically correct you are. And then all of a sudden we're back to drones.
Back to drones, yeah.
But you take a look at the control system on just, almost a hobby level quadcopter now. And when I started my career in the military airplane business in 1980, we would have killed for that technology.
Right.
And now you can buy it in a hobby store.
Right. The amount of intelligence built into that thing.
And, for example, there's at least one guy out on the field, I don't know whether he's here this year, but I know he was at Sun and Fun, who's got an autopilot in his home built that he built where he hacked the attitude control from a hobby drone.
Oh, geez.
Yep. I mean, he's using the Rach Aerosol for the hobby drone, and he just has that running little secondary surfaces on his airplane run by RC servos.
There you go.
That's incredible.
So he's got a full three-axis autopilot that he basically bought at the hobby store.
Right, for $20.
Exactly. It's just amazing to see all this ingenuity in action, and it's a really cool thing.
One of the things that's caught my eye lately, and I've seen a couple of videos of these, everybody has always dreamed about jetpacks, all right? Never been a couple of people out there that have really tried to get things going with these. But there is a company out there that's got videos of a jetpack. It's a little platform that you sit on.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
Uh-huh. That
just don't drop anything.
That lights my cookies.
Well, I think that's in the classic mold of an utterly useless vehicle that would be a blast to have.
Absolutely.
Because the amount of fuel and noise you have to consume and generate to get airborne for a very short time is ridiculous from any practical viewpoint, but it looks like it'd be a hell of a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I just don't know what engine out performance looks like.
Well, you know, and once again, the people who work with me, you know, I'm want to quote Monty Python on occasion, and for, when I look at that, the sheep in the trees routine comes to my mind. You know, where they're sitting at the gate, and you hear meh thud, and then the very British fellow comes along and says, "Notice they do not fly as much as plummet." And, you know, so anytime I see some of these VTOL things, I go, "Okay, but maybe not with me in it." But yeah, it's a cool thing to see.
There are other derivations of this. I've seen several videos of men carrying multi-rotors.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
and once again, you know, I look at that, and it's the same problem. That, you know, VTOL that's been eternal, and that is the amount of energy you need to go vertical is ridiculous. But, you know, once again, it looks like a lot of fun. I mean, I don't think it's, in terms of practical transportation, it's going to be any more likely than the prediction that the Segway was going to replace your personal automobile. But if you look at it for certain missions, it'd probably be very useful.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what people use helicopters for now, like, you know, herding sheep and stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, or surveying grounds.
Yeah. Well, they're already doing that kind of things with quadcopters.
Yeah, but if you can put a human on the quadcopter, you know, you have the equivalent almost of what you could do with a, you know, with an off-road motorcycle or something like that for shortish range. And once again, it gets back to, you know, those of us who are looking at the Hiller flying platform in the 50s and going, I want one. I know it's not useful, but I want one.
Sit for me, rotor over my head is more appealing than rotor under my feet. Thank you.
Well, I can deal with rotor under my feet. It's being in the plane of all those blades
that
would make me concerned.
And you know, the videos that I've seen of that, it appears to be very controllable and everything. And as an RC pilot, I've flown radio control model helicopters, and then I've flown quadcopters. The quadcopters are completely different. They fly so much easier than an RC helicopter.
And that's because the big difference between the quadcopters and RC helicopters is on a quadcopter, you basically have a full authority control system. In other words, you've got the little piezoelectric gyros in the control system that do the rate sensing for you. And so the vehicle is self-stabilizing,
right.
And you're really telling it where to go. You're not flying it the way a pilot flies a helicopter or an airplane. Because, you know, when a pilot flies in a helicopter or an airplane, you're basically putting a rate command into the stick.
Mm-hmm.
And then, depending on the vehicle's natural stability, to keep it from diverging, in effect. So it's that interaction between the pilot putting a rate command in and the natural stability of the vehicle. With the quadcopter, because the piezo gyros have gotten so cheap and processing has gotten so cheap, now you actually have a full authority flight control system like a military airplane in there, and it's controlling the vehicle, and you're telling the little mini computer where you want the vehicle to go.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's a fundamentally different architecture, and that's one place where the fact that the advancement of electronics technology has taken that from super exotic to I can buy it in the hobby store.
Yeah, and early on in my career, I was flying a helicopter and had a tail rotor gyro. And one day I was out fiddling around with it, and I decided, you know, hey, what's it like to fly it without the tail rotor gyro? And it was completely unflyable. The tail was just so twitchy and out of control. So I know these new three-axis stabilization systems are safe, is what some of them are calling it. You know, they're self-righting, for crying out loud. You push a button and you're straight level again.
Don't you wish you had that in your real airplane, a button that says, oh, my God.
And I mean, you know, that those have existed in the past. I mean, a lot of, you know, I mean, Mooney had a wing leveler autopilot at one time and things like that. But you know, the real question is how good those systems are at staying oriented.
Right.
And you know, in today's world now, you know, the technology has gotten cheaper.
Well, I mean, they're to the point where they can recover themselves from unusual attitudes. I don't think a wing lever could ever have done that.
You know, it's a harder thing to do with a fixed wing airplane, you know, because with a quadcopter, you know, you've got thrust in all four corners no matter what the attitude of the vehicle is, so the command is the same. You don't have to take into account things like stall, for example.
Right.
You know, once I start producing an unusual attitude recovery automatic system for an airplane, it's got to have angle of attack limiting in it. It has to know the difference of the characteristics of the airplane as the angle of attack changes, as the side slip angle changes. So it's, you know, it's a much more complicated algorithm to put in the
to make work.
Yeah.
But exciting to watch and test, as long as it's a model.
Well, you know, one of the rules about test, whether it's wind tunnel or flight test, is a truly good test is only exciting after you're sitting there looking at the data.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Because of what the data tells you. You don't want to be excited in flight.
That's true. That especially would be, if you're the pilot.
That would be very disconcerting to have your system set up and have it pull the wings off of the airplane. That'd be a real uh-oh moment.
Well, you know, and this is always the issue with more automation everywhere is, you know, if you look at it in the airline world, even one of the biggest safety issues is the interaction between the human and the automation, because you have situations where the computer is trying to do one thing and the pilot is trying to do the other. And so as we get these more powerful technologies, that's in fact one of the areas where a lot of attention needs to be paid.
Right.
Is you don't want to create a situation where the person and the computer are working at cross purposes.
Right.
Yeah.
That has happened, too.
And the other issue is the more complicated a system gets, the harder it is to test all the possibilities.
Indeed. And, you know, no matter if you've thought of everything, you haven't thought of everything.
Exactly. Right. So, there's always going to be a new twist in there somewheres.
Yep. And you'll find out about it the hard way.
That's it.
Anyway, thank you for joining us, Barnaby. It's always a pleasure to have you. This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie, and you're listening to EAA Radio.